Good morning, everybody. Hi, how you doing? Great. Good. This is, good afternoon, too. This is the stenography panel with our...
Steganography
panel. Oh, I feel so bad now, so I'm really tired. Let's get some coffee into me. All right, this is Ilanka Dunnan. I wanted to make sure I got that part right, at least. She's our Captain Cracker here. You know, you give her a code and she can break it in a couple of minutes. I have no doubt about it. So I'll let her run the panel now since she's the smart one.
With one hard drive tied behind my back.
Probably, yeah. Okay. All right, okay. Here you go.
Hello all, thank you for coming. Thank you for your patience since we had a small technical difficulty at the beginning. Hi, my name is Ilanka Dunnan. I am going to be speaking on cryptography, specifically on a type of cryptography called steganography, which is a method of hiding messages inside of web images, among other things. I'll also be speaking about whether or not Al-Qaeda may or may not have been using steganography in order to hide secret messages or encrypted messages that they were passing back and forth. Let's see, a little bit about me. I am a game designer by trade. I have been working in St. Louis for over 10 years now, working on a website, play.net. We have several massively multiplayer online role-playing games. And I have been speaking at DragonCon for a few years now, and so I've been doing some sessions here in the Electronic Frontiers track, and kind of that meant that I was meeting a lot of the hackers that were also giving sessions here in this track. We'd kind of be passing each other in the halls, waving and saying hi. And in 2000 at DragonCon, I heard about this code that had been written in 1999 by one of the hacker groups, SE2600, and there was a prize offered for the cracking of this code. Now, the code had been out for a year, and so far no one had been able to crack it. I heard about this in 2000, and a little bit after DragonCon, I was homesick with the flu one weekend, and I was really bored, and there was a convention I wanted to go to, and I couldn't because of a scheduling conflict, and I was really annoyed. And I decided to go ahead and take out my frustrations by looking at this code that had been uncracked for a year. It pretty much consumed me for about 10 days, but I did crack it open. And I won the prize for it, which was a free trip to a HackerCon, you know, free hotel, free drinks, free T-shirts, the whole nine yards. And you know, through that, I also heard about some other codes, and I took a look at those, and then I cracked those open as well. And it's to the point now that when they released codes, for example, this is the AtlantaCon code, and at the bottom of the code they put, note, past puzzle crackers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantaCon puzzle. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka. So after September 11th, since I've had all this experience from cracking all these puzzle challenges everywhere, I decided to see if I could help with the war on terrorism. I did several things. One of the things I did was I organized a crisis center, which was tracking down the status of several of our online customers. We didn't know if they'd been affected by September 11th or not. I also contacted the local FBI, and I said, I've got all this cryptography experience. Can I help? Can I help? And I kept calling them up. Can I help? Can I help? Finally, they said, okay, we'll let you help. And we tossed some ideas back and forth with one of the agents there, and what we came up with was that many of the field agents were hearing about this type of cryptography called steganography. And though there are many very fine cryptographers and cryptologists in government, the field agents in general do not have the same kind of cryptography experience that the people in the main office do. So there was something that they set up in St. Louis, and I believe they've set it up in many other cities as well. It's called a Computer Crimes Task Force. And what they were trying to do was increase the level of communication between the various government agencies. So once a month they'd meet and they'd send in representatives from all the different agencies, someone from the FBI, Assistant U.S. Attorney's Office, Postal Inspectors, Customs Agents, Secret Service, and all these people, and they would sit together and they would talk and they would share information. It was supposed to, try and avoid some of the problems that had happened before September 11th. And they invited me to one of those meetings, was the Computer Crimes Task Force, and they asked me to give a talk on steganography. So I did. It was well received. I've been invited to Washington, D.C. as well to also give this talk. And what I'm going to be doing today is basically giving a version of that talk, which is kind of describing what steganography is, a little bit about the history of it, some examples of how it is used, and some examples of how to find it if you're looking for steganography. I'll also be talking about Al-Qaeda. Okay, so I'll also be talking about some of the cryptographic systems that I've run into while I was cracking the code challenges. I have something that I call the three D's of defeating steganography, which is how to detect it, how to decrypt it, and failing that, how to destroy it. And I give some sample uses of steganography, and then at the end I go real quick through some recommended reading. I do have some handouts here. There are some up front, and there's also some in the back as well, these green sheets, which have all of these reading lists. The slides themselves are not currently on the web, but will be on the web as part of the Freaknik site, freaknik.info. So if anyone wants copies of the slides, you can get them that way. Also, if there's a specific piece of information that you want before that, just write to me, and I'll have my email address up here, and I'll be able to help you. Also, if you want me to come speak anywhere, again, just write to me. When Washington, D.C. asked me to come speak, they were asking me what my speaking fee was going to be, and I told them I'm willing to just go and do it for free because I think it would be really cool to go to Washington, D.C. But, you know, so it's kind of like what group is inviting me, and I'll probably just go out and do it myself because I think it's really important to talk about this. Okay, I'm General Manager of Online Community for Simutronics Corporation. I've been doing this for over 12 years. I've been involved with computers forever. My father was involved with computers. He was aircraft. My father was actually on the team that launched the very first geosynchronous communication satellite. He used to work at Hughes Aircraft, and so he used to take me into work with him when I was a little kid, and I'd sit there and I'd play with the key punch machines. I was a speaker at DEF CON last year. DEF CON is a big hacker convention in Las Vegas, and I was also a speaker this year. Some of the codes I've cracked, the Freaknik 3 code, that was the one I talked about that hadn't been cracked in a year, Freaknik 5 code, the AtlantiCon 2 code, even though I was told I wasn't supposed to crack it, I went ahead and did it anyway. UNIS code, the adrenaline code. I mentor many people online teaching about cryptography. I work with a lot of troubled teenagers, and it really helps them to just kind of have an adult to talk to online, and so I mentor many kids that way. I organize the Crisis Center. As part of the Crisis Center that I did after September 11th, one of my ex-customers decided to use September 11th as an opportunity to declare himself dead, and then was going around online pretending to be his own widow as a way of getting sympathy from people and doing other unethical things. And I was the one that figured it out, tracked him down, confronted him with the information, got him to confess, got him to post a public apology, and that was written up in several newspaper articles. If you want links to those, I can send those to you. Okay, so fact and fiction. The common knowledge is that terrorists have been embedding hidden messages in high-traffic web images, such as on eBay and on Amazon, in public news groups, and in images that are being swapped in chat rooms, especially via porn. You know, this is what, quote, the common knowledge, unquote, is. I don't believe that this is true, but it has been written about extensively. For example, USA Today did this article called Terror Groups Hide Behind Web Encryption, with a picture of Osama there. Wired Magazine did it. Bin Laden, Steganography Master. Also, they did an article called Secret Messages Come In Dot Waves. ABC News covered it, saying, a secret language, hijackers may have used secret internet messaging techniques. So even though those articles are out, all my research points to the fact that I don't think Al-Qaeda was doing this. Or if they did, there's no proof that they have been doing it. It's complete rumor. So let's talk a little bit more about what steganography is. We'll break down the word. Stega means covered. It's from the Greek stegos, which means roof. And then we have graphia, which is the Greek word, which means writing. So steganography means covered writing or secret writing. Most people, when they see the word steganography, they think of something different. You know, the stegosaurus, which means a covered lizard or a lizard with a roof, but of course is not a type of cryptography. Okay. All right, what is steganography? Steganography is a way of hiding a message in such a way that it is not immediately obvious that there even is a hidden message. For example, in this sentence, after the theater, all clients keep a tab down at Wesley's Nook. Anyone see a secret message there? Who called that out? Very good. Yes. And you got the code last year as well during the hacking session. What's your name?
Kim.
Kim. Awesome, Kim. Congrats. Okay. What she saw was that the first letter of each word, if you take them all and you put them together, you get the message, attack at dawn. All right. That is a very basic, simple form of steganography, a message that it was not obvious. Okay. Now, we have captured some of the messages that were used by Osama's group, Al-Qaeda. we captured one of their code books. And so some of the stuff that we did find them using, for example, when they're talking on cell phones and they wanted to say FBI, instead of saying FBI, they would say food and beverage industry. If they wanted to refer to Osama, instead of saying Osama's name, they would say the director. Instead of the word bomb, they used an Arabic word for baby food. Everything else that we've been able to capture, and we've captured several of their messages, was open text and communication. As a matter of fact, just a couple days ago in USA Today newspaper, they were talking about someone who's been indicted out of the state of Washington. And I'll say that we're allegedly, I don't know this for a fact, but in the indictment they say that they believe that he was trying to set up a terrorist training camp in Oregon. And the proof that they have for this is that instead of sending an encrypted message, he sent a fax. It was just straight open text. Okay, some more historical background on cryptography. There's basically three main types of ciphers: substitution, transposition, and concealment. Substitution is you swap one letter out for another. Transposition, you're moving different letters around like an anagram. And concealment ciphers, which is where you hide the message. So steganography is basically just a concealment cipher. Early examples. About 2,000 years ago, there was a general who needed to send a message across enemy lines. He knew that any messenger that he sent would be thoroughly searched, so he needed to find a secret way of sending a message. What he did was he took a messenger, he shaved the guy's head, tattooed a message on the guy's scalp, waited for the hair to grow back, and then sent the messenger across enemy lines. He was trying to encourage a king on the other side of the lines to revolt. So the messenger got across enemy lines just fine. They didn't find the message. At the other side, he shaved his head, pointed his head at the king, and there was the message. Invisible ink is also a type of steganography. Or if you've ever done that experiment where you write one message on a piece of paper with, like, you know, onion juice or lemon juice or something, and then you write another message in pen, that is a type of steganography. It's a hidden message. Newspapers. There used to be a way that if you wanted to send mail, this was about 100 years ago, I believe, that it would cost postage to send the letter. However, if you wanted to send a newspaper through the post, there was, well, for some reason, they said that was completely free. It was free to send a newspaper anywhere you wanted, but if you wanted to send a letter, then you got charged postage. So what did the hackers of that era do? They figured out a way to hide messages inside of newspapers so that they didn't get charged postage. What they would do is they would take a newspaper, and then they would see all the text on the newspaper, and then they would take a pin, and they would poke holes in the letters of the newspaper. So if they wanted to say, Dear Aunt Sally, they would find a D, poke a hole, go to the next E, poke a hole, go to the next A, poke a hole. That way, when the recipient got the newspaper, all they would have to do is hold it up to the light, look for the letters that had a hole poked under them, and be able to read the message that way. That was a type of steganography. So the methods have changed over the years, but the discipline is basically the same. Okay, these are some of the codes that I've run across in the hacker subculture. I won't go into all of these in detail. We have ROT13, UU encoding, PGP. Over here, I put some of the leet speak that you run across. It says, I am a leet hacksaw, you are owned. Though in my experience, if I see anyone using this type of speak extensively, it almost certainly means that they're a wannabe and that they don't know what they're talking about. Usually, not always. Okay. This is something else that's captured the imagination of the hacker subculture, especially in SE-2600. This is a sculpture which is in the center of CIA headquarters called Kryptos. And it's a sculpture to cryptography, and there's a code inscribed on the sculpture itself. The sculpture's been there about 12 years, and what we know so far is that there's about four different sections of code. So far, only three of them have been cracked. The first two were cracked relatively rapidly. Third section was just cracked, I think, in mid-1999, and the fourth section has not been cracked yet, though a lot of people have been looking at it. I really, really want to see this sculpture. I want to sit on that rock right there for about a half hour and stare at the sculpture. I've been researching a lot about it. I've been researching about the sculptor, Jim Sanborn, who created it, and I've got some ideas. Now, when I was in Washington, D.C., the area recently, I tried to get in to see the sculpture, and I needed to find CIA headquarters. Well, first of all, you know, you can't just go and get the street address and plug it into MapQuest and figure out how to go to CIA. There is no street address for CIA. And I looked extensively. There's no street address. So I wouldn't find a little thing like that daunt me. So I kind of knew the shape of the building, because I'd seen pictures of it in movies and stuff, and so I got satellite recon pictures of the entire Langley, Virginia area and started looking for the shape of the building. Found it, then got the latitude and longitude, and then plugged that into MapQuest, and then I was able to get directions to CIA headquarters. Drove up, and I figured that I'd take the exit and, you know, drive by the gate and kind of, you know, scope things out. Well, I got to the exit, and there's no service road. It's like you take the exit off the highway, and boom, you're there with this huge gate with many large armed guards pouring out of the hut, wanting to know why I'm there. And I said, hey, you know, I want to get in to see Kryptos. And they knew what Kryptos was, and they said, sorry, you can't get in, only people with official business. And I tried to say, you know, is there a tour day or something? And they said, nope, you got to have official business. So I want to get into CIA headquarters, and I'm hoping that they will invite me in to give this talk so that I can get into CIA headquarters. And then I can have a half, I told them I'll do it for free if I can have a half hour to sit on that rock and look at this sculpture. The text is available online, yes. And the first parts will decode to things like, between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. And I believe that all four sections, when decoded, decrypt to a kind of metacode, and there may be something else. One of the sections decodes to a latitude and longitude, and one of the sections decodes to the part about discovering King Tut's tomb, the bit about the guy opening the hole and then sticking a candle in and seeing all the wonders within. So there may be something buried somewhere, I don't know, but I really want to see that sculpture. Okay, the Freaknik 3 code. This is, as I mentioned, had been uncracked since its release in October 99. By the way, it was written by Johnny X, who's sitting over here on the other side of the pillar here. I cracked it in 10 days, won a trip to a HackerCon, et cetera. Then I wrote this whole tutorial about how I cracked the code. And on your handout list is the URL of where this tutorial is if you'd like to take a look at it. I wrote it in a very tongue-in-cheek fashion, very cyberpunkish fashion. And there's lots of in-jokes there about the hacker subculture, about movies, about Matrix, Monty Python, you name it. There's all kinds of stuff hidden in there. Yeah, Johnny X put something about masturbation in the code. That part's in there as well, though it's encrypted. Okay. Okay, so I won't go into all the details of how I cracked the code. You can look at the tutorial if you're interested in that. It did have several sections, hexadecimal, ROT 13, anagrams. There was a pointer to a secret web page and several red herrings as well. One of the things was it pointed to this secret web page. That's a picture of Johnny X there in the center of it holding up a sign with some numbers on it, and that's a picture of his girlfriend at the time's midriff where he'd written an obscure message on it, as he tends to do to his girlfriends. He writes things on them from time to time. The numbers on the sign that he's holding translate to ISBN in hexadecimal and a number. So it's an ISBN number for a book. So I went to Amazon, plugged that in, and it points to this book, which is called Disappearing Cryptography by Peter Wehner. This is a book about steganography. By the way, I had a chance to meet Peter Wehner at the hacker convention H2K2 a few weeks ago. So this is an autograph copy of Disappearing Cryptography. Geography ants is an anagram, which anagrams to the word steganography. And inside the image of Johnny X's head with the sign there is hidden a message with steganography, with the password of steganography. And that what was hidden in there was a PGP key, which I needed to open a PGP message that was in a separate part of the code. So within the within that picture were the instructions saying, congratulations, you've gotten to the center of the code. Now you need to post a message to a specific hacker mailing list explaining why I like to go swimming with bow-legged women and swim between their legs. Obviously, Johnny X had not thought that a woman might be the one to solve this code. Also, as he tells me, he was drunk at the time that he wrote this. So he also said the message had to be in haiku or sonnet format. So the haiku that I posted, I got through all the code, got to that, and I'm like, how the heck am I supposed to write this? But I came up with something. Haiku, as you know, is the five-syllable, seven-syllable, five-syllable. So the haiku that I posted was, Johnny X and I will discuss things aquatic if he wears a suit. And it took him a month, but he finally acknowledged that, yes, I cracked the code, won the prize. Okay, types of modern steganography. So messages can be hidden in images. They can be hidden in audio files, videos, web page text. They can be hidden in pretty much anything. Okay, here's a very basic example of steganography. Over here on the right, we have this icon, which is actually the logo for a company called Snow Software, which creates steganography utilities using a form of steganography called white space steganography. And if we take this image and we pump it into, in this case I pump it into PaintShop Pro, and we take a look at the palette, ignore all the black squares here, and we're just going to concentrate on the three colors up here on the left. In that image are three colors. We have black, white, and white. Two different kinds of white. Why is that? Okay. For those who know colors, you'll know that to create a color on a computer, you generally need to have what RGB values, some red, some green, some blue. And each one of those values can be a number, in this case, between 0 and 255. So to have black, you're going to have RGB values of 0, 0, and 0. To have white, you're going to have RGB values of 255, 255, 255. So in this case, we have our black color, 0, 0, 0, and we have our white color, 255, 255, and then we have this other white color, which is 255, 255, 254. So it's a form of white, but it's exactly one bit off from regular white. So in here, too, and the human eye cannot see the difference between these two shades of white. What I'm going to do is I'm going to change one of those to a more visible color. And there's our polar bear in a snowstorm. That is a form of steganography, a way of hiding a message. If you have one takeaway from this, remember polar bear in a snowstorm. That's steganography. Like when kids would hold up a piece of paper and, you know, what is the white piece of paper? What is this a picture of? It's a polar bear in a snowstorm. Ha ha. Well, that's steganography right there. It's a way of hiding things in a way that they're very difficult to see. Okay, so what can this be used for? It can be used for watermarking. I'll go over some other examples later on. You can hide things in many, many different kinds of formats. You can hide them in GIF files, and WAV files, and JPEGs. You can hide them in Macintosh PICT files. This is a webpage that I got that has various different kinds of steganography software. It's difficult to see at the top here, but they sort it out by operating system. So there's software for Windows, DOS, Java, Macintosh, OS2, Unix, Linux, Amiga. Lots and lots of utilities out there and all freely available. Here's an example of one. It's called JSTEG. It's a very simple point-and-click interface. You can take an image, you can hide a file in it, or you can extract a file. Here's another utility called JPHide. And again, very simple. You've got the input file, the hidden file, the file you want to hide, and you have the saved file. You can set a passphrase on it. Very, very simple to use. This is one that I use a great deal that Johnny X also used. It's called STools 4. This is their interface. And so what I did is I took the picture of the crypto sculpture, and I got it off the CIA website, and I hid a message inside that image. So on the left, we have the unencrypted image, and on the right, this is the image with something hidden inside of it. You're not really going to see anything with the naked eye between those two things. What I hid was a 2K file, by the way. This is what I hid. It's the Robert Frost poem called Mending Wall, the one about good fences make good neighbors. And the differences that you'll see between these two images, on this side, this is the original image, which is 164K in size, that has 156 different colors in it. Then after encryption, it's 150K in size. It's actually a little bit smaller. The encryption process actually decreased the file size. But look at the color depth. Instead of 156 colors, now it's got 252 different colors. Okay, now comparing the palette between those two images, and I hope this shows up on the screen, I sorted these colors by luminance. And the things I'm going to point out are, like, over here, you start getting several different colors that are very close to each other. We got four different kinds of white here. Look at these. We got these four different kinds of green, four different kinds of green here, four different kinds of this light brown color. Also, I'll point out down here where the blacks, the blackest black is 000. The next blackest black is 001. It's a kind of black that's exactly one bit off. And that's a big flag for me that something may be going on with that image when you have those colors that are very, very close together. Here I hit a larger file inside of the image. This is before encryption, after encryption. Visually, again, you're not really going to see a whole lot on the screen. When I look at the images really close, I see a little bit of speckling that starts showing up in the black parts of the windows up there. Here, though, you see the file size, 164K before, and then after, 252K. So in this case, putting all that extra information in the file actually ballooned the file. You've got a container file that actually got larger by putting more information into it. Also, if you look at the color depth, we have 156 colors before and after, 256 colors. It's using all the colors that are available to it. And that's about the largest. 100K was about the most information that I could put with STools into this image. comparing the palette between the two, before and after. Again, looking at after, you see now we got like these eight different whites very close together, eight different greens, eight different blues. So it's needing to have several different colors very, very close together. It also completely chopped off the 000 and the 001 black. So the blackest black in the picture right now is an 844. Okay, you can also do this with audio files. Again, you can use the least significant bits to hold the data. You could also try transmitting a message in the unhearable part of the audio spectrum. For example, there's a group called Moloch, which is a hacker group in New York. Chloroform, one of the members there, he said that they did something where they took each musical note and they encoded it as a numerical value. Then they laid down a very low-volume audio track in the background of some existing music, and they had an encrypted message using the notes in that track. Also, a story that I heard at DEF CON was that to defeat cryptography export regulations, one team converted the RSA source code into sound and then broadcast it into other countries via radio just to prove that they could do it. So audio files, I don't know if this will, am I hooked up for sound? Probably not, let me see. No, it basically sounds like a phone ringing. I'm sorry that I don't have it hooked up for sound here. This is the wave, and there's no difference audio before and after. If I blow this up, you can see the way that the wave looks before encryption. And then after encryption, here's what it looks like. You see these tiny little one-bit differences. That's what it looked like after something was put inside of it. Video files, you can do the same thing. You can embed messages just like with audio files. Also, video. There was a lot of discussion about whether Osama's group may have been hiding secret messages inside of video files as a way of triggering attacks, activating sleeper cells. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with steganography. There's other ways that a message could be hidden. For example, hand position, blackjack card sharks. If they're sending in a team of people into a casino and they're counting cards, they'll have one person who's playing cards and is very chatty, talking to everyone, obviously not concentrating on the cards. He's just playing. He'll have a teammate who is concentrating on the cards and is counting cards. He needs to give a signal to the guy who's playing the cards, should you bet low or bet high. So the signal would be something as simple as the guy who's actually counting will be sitting like this. If his hand is up high on his arm, it means bet high. If his hand is down low on his arm, it means bet low. So very, very simple signals can be sent through video files that way. Seating order. For example, if Osama was in a video and he had various of his lieutenants around him, maybe there was some signal saying, okay, if this guy is sitting to Osama's left, it means something, and if the guy's sitting to his right, it means something different. Or just which people are in the background. There could be something saying, okay, if you see these faces, it means this word, and if you see these faces, it means this word. What if Bert? Yeah, Bert is evil, right? Eyebrow code, there was a movie that talked about this where there was a prisoner of war who was blindfolded and was being forced to read off a message into a video stream, a video camera, and he was like raising and lowering his eyebrows in a certain code as a way of sending a message. The Vietnam POWs had a very specific kind of code when they were in their various cells. They had a tap code that they would use. And the way this worked was, if you can imagine a grid where it goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. So you have this 5x5 grid, and they doubled one letter. So the letter C is the third column over in the first row. So the letter C would be, and that would be a way of communicating that letter. And they would send messages back and forth to different cells with this code. Well, once you get really good at the code, it doesn't have to be a tapping. It could be, you could be standing in line and you go, you could cough it. You could shuffle your feet. The way you're raking leaves, you could be sending messages that way. Once the code is understood, there are many, many ways of concealing a message. Messages and web pages. The way that the data is arranged on a page could convey a message. White space steganography, I think this is pretty cool. This is like that polar bear in a snowstorm, the snow software. It will take a web page, and then it will change it where it will insert spaces at the end of each line, between one and three spaces. And that's a way of communicating basically binary data. The human eye is not going to see it. Even if you look at the source of the page, you're probably not going to see it unless you know what you're looking for. List arrangements. Peter Wehner talks about this in the new version of his book, like David Letterman's Top 10. You could potentially transmit information that way. There's many different ways. One simple way is you're not changing the humor of what he's talking about. But, for example, on each item, if it's an odd number of words on that item, it might mean a binary one. If it's an even number of words on that item, it might be a binary zero. So bit by bit, you could literally, you could send some messages that way if you wanted to. You could also do things with changing the tense of a verb, if it's an active tense or a passive tense, in terms of, you know, past tense. He also talks about ways of doing a sports stream, a sport announcement. Like if you wanted to say it's a long fly ball to left field or out to left field, it's a long fly ball. And if you have a encoding system set up, you can be transmitting information with each sentence that's uttered. So ways that terrorists could use steganography, for example, they might have a tourist information website. So the sender would only need to upload a new picture to that site, and then the receiver would just have to view the page. They wouldn't even necessarily have to download the image. Just by viewing the page, you've already got the image in your cache, and then you can get the image out of your cache later and open it up that way. And there are witnesses who did see Muhammad Atta, one of the terrorists, who would be regularly going to libraries and downloading images. Usually the images he was getting, what the witnesses said, were pictures of children and pictures of landscapes. I believe there's also, and this is rumor, but some of the terrorist warnings that we've been getting over the last several months is, I believe, because they're tracking terrorists in terms of what images they are looking at on the web, and if they're looking at a lot of images of a particular stadium, then they're sending out a warning to those stadium owners that something may be planned for that area. Okay, the three D's of defeating steganography: detect, decrypt, destroy. I'll go through this really fast. Detection. You can look at an image's palette, look for very close color pairs, count the number of colors, see if there's a lot of colors in the image, more than you would expect. Also look for the last modified date and size. If you're looking at a web page and there's several images that are all dated like 1995 and you've got one image dated 2002, maybe there's a particular reason that that image is newer than the other ones are. Also look at the differences in the types of images used on a site. If everything there is a JPEG and then one image is a bitmap, there may be some reason for that. There are steganalysis tools that will go out and analyze images, try to detect if they're using steganography. University of Michigan wrote a program called StegDetect, which analyzes JPEG images. It looks at the discrete cosine transform coefficients in the images and then determines if they have the type of coefficient that might indicate steganography. There's a program called Secure Stego, which is written by the Air Force and Professor Jessica Friedrich out of the State University of New York, Binghamton, that will look for very close color pairs. There's also STELA, the Steganography Exploration Lab, which analyzes differences between source and encrypted images. This is the webpage for one of those programs. Niels Provos, who did the University of Michigan study, he wrote a steganalysis tool, and then he turned right around and he wrote a steganography encryption software that could not be detected by the analysis tool that he had just written. So it's a continual arms race. As new tools come out to find steganography, new tools will be coming out that cannot be found by the existing tools. Okay, decryption. Standard cloak and dagger. You know, if you can beg, borrow, buy, or steal, get the password, get the location of the message, what type of encryption they used, what software they used, and then you just open the message whenever you want. Passwords. You can also do dictionary attacks. I'll talk a little bit about zip crackers. There's this program called FZC, which can crack open password encrypted zip files. Short passwords are very, very easy to crack open. If someone would like me to demonstrate this later, I'd be more than happy to. If you have a password protected zip file that has like a 4-character zip file, this thing will have it open in about 30 seconds. So better passwords are passwords that use combinations of letters, numbers, and spaces, and long passwords that have a variety of letters and numbers, punctuation symbols, are the best. Most people that are in the hacker track here, you guys already know this, but this is my standard plug for pick good passwords. Bad passwords are very, very easy to crack open. The Usenix Security Workshop did some research and found that if you look at any particular group of passwords, at least 25% of those passwords are going to be weak passwords that are susceptible to dictionary attacks, which means that it's not even a random, like XYZA. ZipCracker would open that in about 30 seconds. A dictionary attack would not find XYZA because it's only going to be using letter or words that are actually in a dictionary. So steganography, you could try a dictionary attack on a file. There is a program called StegBreak, which will run a password dictionary attack on JPEG images. It can check between 15,000 and 112,000 words per second, depending on the encryption type. You can also have what's called a distributed dictionary attack, where you cluster several computers together. For example, you get say 26 computers, and one computer is going to be trying all everything that starts with the letter A, and at the same time the next computer is going to be trying everything that starts with the letter B, and basically it's a faster way of going through the alphabet, and you don't, it's not necessarily just 26 computers, you can just have several computers all working at it at the same time. Okay, so we've gone through detect, decrypt, and now they're delete. If you're not sure if there's a message there or not, you can try to delete it, and you could do this by intercepting the image, changing it in some way, like by cropping it to a smaller size, changing its color depth, or save it in a different format or some combination, then save this new image and send it along to the receiver. Any message that was in that image is probably going to be destroyed by whatever you just did, but you need to play with it. I've had images where if I cropped them to a smaller size, that instantly deleted any encrypted message that was in there. Others, I've tried cropping them a little bit and it didn't delete the message. So the best format that I can think of is to actually save it as a different. If you save a GIF as a bitmap or something like that, that had the highest probability of deleting any message that was in there. Steganography has other weaknesses. There's always the password security issue. Technical literacy requirements. Whoever's doing it has to know a little bit about computers. They have to have access to a computer. And electricity and the internet and all those things. Also, there's the doubts about interception. If someone has put a message up on a website and they're sending it to a particular recipient, they don't. I mean, there could be 100,000 people looking at that web page, so you're not going to know if anyone else has gotten a hold of your message. Messages also need to stay small. Most normal web images are under 10K in size. So you can hide like a page of text, but you're going to have a lot of trouble if you're putting a spreadsheet or a diagram in there because it'll balloon the image's byte size or may just not fit at all. Audio files can hold even less. Okay, so getting back to the fact and fiction. In August 2001, shortly before September 11th, the University of Michigan did do a comprehensive scan of eBay. They downloaded 2 million images off of eBay and analyzed them to see if they might be having some sort of steganographic content. They identified 17,000 as being possible. 15,000 specifically may have been encrypted with a type of software called JPHide. Then they clustered 60 different computers together and ran extensive dictionary attacks. They found nothing, not a single image that had steganography in it. And then they went and they looked at Usenet, and they downloaded 1 million messages. This time they clustered 200 different computers together and again found nothing, zip. This is a one of their websites where they're talking about it, and down here at the bottom, and, you know, however, we have not found a single hidden message. Now, the Michigan study did have some weaknesses. For example, they were only looking for very specific types of encryption. They were only looking at JPEG files. They weren't looking at bitmaps. They weren't looking at GIFs. They weren't looking at WAVs or anything like that. They were only looking for things that might have been encrypted with programs such as OutGuess, JSTEG, JPHide. They weren't looking for S-tools. Also, if terrorists were doing this, the terrorists may have written their own applications, and those would not have been found by this University of Michigan study. Also, University of Michigan only really looked in two places. They looked on eBay, they looked on Usenet, but they weren't doing a general web scan. Also, when they did their dictionary attack, they were only looking for the languages of English, French, and German. They weren't looking for Arabic. They weren't looking for Farsi. They did include some words from the Quran and from popular literature. Also, it's possible that if there was some encrypted message there, it may have had a dictionary-proof password. For example, the word apple is going to be found by a dictionary attack very rapidly. The word apple 7 is never going to be found by a dictionary attack. So the university concluded that there were three possible explanations. One, either there's no significant use of steganography on the internet, or nobody uses steganographic systems that they could find, or all users of steganographic systems carefully chose passwords that were not susceptible to dictionary attacks. But again, I point to the Usenet security workshop that says, statistically, in any group of passwords, 25% of them are going to be weak passwords that will be found by a dictionary attack. So I know there is steganography on the web. I've got at least two examples on my own personal website. These were never found by the study, again, because the study was only looking for JPEG images and they weren't doing major web scans. The study did find one image in the wild. This was it was an image that was placed on a website by ABC because ABC was doing a news segment on steganography. And in the news segment, ABC said, on this website, we have put an image that has something encrypted in it with steganography. So University of Michigan, they pointed their program at this website, and surprise, they found an image that used steganography. And so this at the top is this is the image that they found on the website, and then they cracked it open, and this was the image that was hidden inside the above image. The password for it was ABC. Okay, here's another example of steganography. This is a code that I wrote. It's called the Elanca code. I released this in February of 2002. I used several different encryption types in this code, including steganography, PGP, UU encoding, ROT13. It's been solved by several people around the country so far in several different states. I did contact all of these people, and I asked them, I told them, I'm going to be going up and I'm giving a talk to the FBI. Is it okay if I put your name on a slide? And every single one of them said, yeah, that would be really cool. So I know it's okay to publicize their names here. Some of these people I haven't met. Are any of them here in this room? Anyone that's cracked the Elanca code? Okay, just checking. There were a couple in DEF CON. Okay, so basically the code, it decrypts to a password, and the instructions go to Elanca's personal site at members.aol.com/Elanca. I manage about 8 different websites on about 6 different servers. In this case, I use my AOL site. And I said, look for the image next to the FAQ question, why are icebergs blue? So here's my personal site. And I went to Antarctica back in 1999, so I did a travel site about my trip there. And one of the pages has to do with icebergs around Pleno Island, and why are icebergs such weird shapes, and why are icebergs blue? So this was a picture that I took back in 1999. I took this image in 2002, and I hid a message inside of it using S-Tools. And this is the message that I hid inside of it. I'm not going to ask anybody here to solve it right now, but anyone who's really good at this can probably figure it out in about 10 minutes. Okay, so the future, where's steganography going? There is a new edition of Peter Wehner's book, Disappearing Cryptography. That's this one. This one just came out in May of this year. It's got 40% new material. Commercial uses for steganography, there will be some. Watermarking is, of course, the top one. Documentation, there's been some discussion about, like, if someone has an X-ray and you want to include the doctor's notes in the X-ray, that would be a way of keeping everything together. Instead of sending the notes as a separate file, put the notes directly in the X-ray itself. Another possibility is like all the virtual pornography they're talking about, and can you tell if the models are kids or are they manufactured by an animation program, or are they over the age of 18? And potentially there could be some system of putting an ID inside of these pornographic images that would have, say, go to this post office box or go to this address, and here's where records are maintained showing that all of these are legal models or that the models were created with the following animation program. Pixelvor, this is a change in a word off of the FBI Carnivore program, which can check all email going back and forth to a certain date. They've actually changed the name from Carnivore, so it no longer has such a scary name. Now it's got a very dull name. Pixelvor could potentially be a way of scanning all images that are going back and forth to certain address and scanning those images to see if they're using steganography. But in general, it's going to be an arms race. You're going to have new utilities for hiding messages, then you're going to have new utilities for analyzing those messages to see if they use cryptography, and then more new utilities that can't be found by the original steganalysis, and back and forth and around we go. So, summary. Steganography is a way of concealing messages inside other media, such as sound files and graphic images. There are many freely available steganographic utilities that are available on the web. Steganography is extremely difficult, but not impossible to detect. And there are many anecdotal stories about the use of steganography on the internet, but so far no one has been successful, at least publicly, in running mass scans and finding any. I have given this talk to other people at other conventions, and so far no one has been able to come up with a single example. If you have heard of one or if you have any proof, I encourage you to bring it forward to me. I've even talked to Peter Wehner, and I asked him if he'd heard of any terrorist use of steganography, and he said the same thing I have, that you keep hearing rumors about it, but there's no facts. Contact information if anyone wants to contact me. The easiest email to reach me at is elanca@aol.com, or if you use AOL Instant Messenger, I can be reached at screen name Elanca. And I have recommended reading. Again, I have several handouts here, these green sheets here and in the back of the room, that have links to a lot of the articles that where I got this information. And that's it. Any questions?
Have you seen any programs? I've been looking for something like this specifically to make your life more difficult with the next few codes that I'm working on. Have you seen anything that will let you kind of randomize the post-stego encoded bitmap a bit so it's not quite so obvious Kind of what I'm asking is the polar bear picture where you only had two colors, naturally that's a bad one to use because when you check the palette, it's really going to show up that you've got, two shades of white and they're one bit apart. If you're using, say, something with 256 colors in there, but you've got an obvious slant towards your pixels that are being used to encode the Stego, are there any applications or any tools out there, any programs that more evenly distribute the palette with regards to either pictures or distribute the bits when you encode into audio? And if you found anything like that, I would appreciate that info because I haven't found anything like that.
I have not looked at every Stego utility out there, but yes, I would go to the page that I list, which has the various different utilities for various operating systems. The most basic forms of steganography are just going to be changing the least significant bits in a direct, if you want the letter A, and you're going to have 061, and so they're going to be modifying the bits right there. There's others that will encrypt it that do require password protection. S-Tools, you can use several different encryption types. You've got the triple DES, you've got the IDEA, and other forms. I don't have any one in particular that I recommend. I would just keep looking around.
Yeah, I've played with a couple of them. I haven't found anything that suits my needs yet that will stand up to the obvious. Let's check and see if we can find any bias here in the palette or the audio file. And I'm really too lazy to write one. So, oh well. Next question, I guess.
Do we have the new two questions? Do we have the new name for Carnivore? Have they told us what the name is?
Yeah, I don't remember it offhand, but I can find it and I can get it to you later. It's something like Project 27B, or it's a really DCS 1000. Yeah.
All right, that's good.
Okay.
All right, and I'm sorry I came in late. Did you already talk about Echelon?
I talked a little bit about the messages of the terrorists that we have been able to capture and the codes that they use. For example, when they wanted to say FBI on cell phones, instead of saying FBI, they would say food and beverage industry and some of the things like that. So I can show you those slides after if you want.
All right, well, has the government admitted to Echelon, or is that just us talking about it on the web?
My understanding is I would ask you. I mean, you seem to be more plugged into the government than I am. This is, by the way, this is the guy that's been giving talks on secret agencies and the terrorist threat all through DragonCon.
Yeah, and I brought my lapel pin. As I was saying, but what do we know about what do we know about the Echelon thing? Just tell us what you know.
That pretty much everything is scanned. Every communication is recorded, and it's not recorded for long periods of time. They kind of check things and then they toss them to the side very rapidly. But there are some examples of things that have been flagged that shouldn't have been flagged. For example, there was a housewife who was talking to her neighbor, and she was saying, "Oh yeah, Jimmy had his play last night. It really bombed." So boom, bomb, and it got flagged by the scanning utility. But then you get a human in the loop who checks it and then tosses it, saying, "Okay, this is not a terrorist talking." Next question.
Yeah, in your experience, have you seen much use of book codes or? How easy, I guess, would that be to combine with regular stenography?
Okay.
By book code, I'm saying that if you get a certain volume, that way you can go to a page number, a paragraph, and then start counting words over.
So you're talking about something like the Beale cipher, which used, I believe, the Declaration of Independence, and then did a code by saying, 4-3, which means the fourth word and the third letter. I am not aware of Al-Qaeda using any type of code like that, though, of course, it's possible. It has some of the same weaknesses, which is that once someone knows the system and they know which book or which manuscript or other literary overture that you're using, then other people can be reading the message. Any other questions? And the man with the microphone runs.
So other than the ABC page and the Freaknik 3 code, there aren't any really other confirmed examples of steganography you found online anywhere?
Me personally, I found several examples of steganography. Usually just by using Google, I go in and I type steganography, and I think like the disc.org crew has some examples of steganography on their site. There's the freaking examples. In terms of the University of Michigan study, the only thing that they found, aside from the tracer images that they inserted themselves, was that one picture on the ABC News site.
I was just thinking maybe it would be fun to start putting a bunch of stego images up in different places and have the message be basically an invitation to someone in FBI, CIA, or NSA to come to DragonCon next year and give a talk.
I think we'd be waiting a long, long, long time.
Probably, but yeah, just okay. Fun idea.
Okay. Any other questions?
When you were talking about the Echelon Project, it made me think about how, you know, after the 9/11 thing, we talk about bombings and stuff like that. Just for me, talking to my sister on the phone, how often do you think I might have been flagged talking about terrorists and bombs and stuff like that? I mean, is it every man, woman, child, or is it just certain people or certain sections of...
I am not an expert on Echelon. My understanding is that it's everything. But does anyone here know more about it than I? There's a 60-minute segment that was done on it. So if you can find a copy, or if I can find a pointer to it with a transcript, I'll send that along to you. Okay. Did anyone notice that there were some green letters throughout the presentation? Anybody? I actually hid a message inside of the PowerPoint presentation here. Did anybody want to admit spotting any of it? You noticed some differences? Okay. Yeah, I did hide a message here. There were some green letters. And what I did was I shouldn't be pointing, I should be using the mouse. Sometimes on some of the slides, this was in a normal font, and sometimes it was in a bold font. And if it was in a bold font, that was the flag that there was going to be something else on that page. And what I did was on some of them, you can see the word green is actually green here. And I hid certain letters that were green. It was the normal text, but if you took all those letters that were green, you put them together, there was another message that was hidden in the presentation. It was generally like one or two letters per slide. And the message was... All right, and that does it. Thank you very much.